Let's get things rolling by getting on board the G&M Family Market phone line and welcoming back to the program Mike Giardi of NBC Sports Boston. Hey, Mike.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this afternoon?
I am well, sir.
Has the heat broken in the Boston area?
The rain has sort of cooled down a little bit, and tomorrow is going to be a gem of a day, about 75, 76 degrees, no humidity. We'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little Patriots out of the box here and get your thoughts. No big surprise that the Edelman suspension was upheld.
Yeah, I mean, when word started to filter down that they were challenging more the procedural method in which his test was administered versus the actual substance in the test, I had a feeling, that he was just kind of looking for the Richard Sherman way. And Sherman, even though he claimed, I didn't test positive for anything, he got off because they didn't follow the chain of command properly with the cup, the cup of urine. So, when I saw that Edelman was taking that route, I said, well, they clearly kind of grasping at straws here. And I would assume that he's not going to take it to the next level and try to take it to court. But who knows? These Patriots have been, they pushed things to the limits in recent years.
They've overcome so many obstacles in the last few seasons. Is there any concern with Edelman missing the first four games?
I think for sure, because you lost such a trusted guy in Danny Edelman, who wasn't exactly an apples for apples guy that you just plug in there, but certainly some of his ability out of the slot mirrored what Julian was able to do. Combine that with the fact that there's a fair amount of veteran receivers that are in their first year going into their first training camp with the Patriots, and the fact that Tom Brady decided to spend the better part of OTAs away from the team and working out when he did with just Julian Edelman, should lead you to have a little bit of concern about how it's going to look, especially early on.
What kind of questions, what are the biggest questions they need to answer when everybody reports to camp?
I think there are plenty for a team that just went to a Super Bowl and, had the ball with a little over 2 minutes left and down by five. Is that defense been solidified? Is there a more consistent pass rush? Are they getting better play at the linebacker level, especially in the middle? Landon Roberts struggled, obviously. Dante Hightower's coming back, and you hope for full health for him, and that will change things at that level. How do they fill the Malcolm Butler role? And look, he didn't play very well last year, but in years prior, he had been a very good player for them. So, those are things I look at the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, does Brady still have that fire? What does it look like when he's back for training camp? And can he mesh with some of these receivers, some of these guys that they're going to need? I don't think there's a lot of great players at that position, but all I need is one of those guys to emerge, whether it's Jordan Matthews or Kenny Britt or it's the rookie Braxton Berrios. Somebody has to elevate, and I think that's on them, but it's also on the quarterback to help get them up to speed. So I think those are some of the things that I'll be keeping a close eye on. And lastly, you can't forget left tackle, right? Nate Solder has been there. Between Nate Solder and Matt Light, you've had basically the last two decades nailed down at left tackle. And now you're in search of one.
We're talking with Mike Giardi of NBC Sports Boston. Mike, who do you think will be the most impactful of the rookies they're bringing in?
Well, I mean, certainly you look at Sony Michel's playmaking ability and, the fact that he may end up with the ball in his hands more than any of those other guys and say he's the guy. But to me, I just look at Isaiah Wynn, who was their first overall pick, the 23rd overall. Whether he's going to be the left guard or maybe he ends up as the left tackle, I think he has the potential to see the field quite a bit and probably get more snaps than anyone else. And certainly if he ends up as the left tackle, then that's a huge find for them. But even if he ends up as someone who helps, either usher Joe Tooney to the sidelines or if he's a swing guy and you build some depth there as you move forward with Shaq Mason probably going to command a pretty ridiculous contract next offseason. I look at him as someone who's pretty important in this class.
Mike, let's talk a little NBA. It's been such a crazy week or so of free agency with all the moves. I like your take on social media a few nights ago when you suggested that maybe LeBron was running away from the Celtics. It sure seems like nobody wants to be around to face them in the East anymore.
I mean, what they've built here has been pretty remarkable, and obviously you go all the way back to the fleecing of the Nets when they traded Pearson Garnett at the tail end of their career and got unprotected number ones, which you've turned into Well, in part, you turn that into Kyrie Irving. You've turned it into Jaylen Brown. You have Jason Tatum on your roster now. The blend of young players, but some in some cases like Kyrie, established players, makes you think that they're the team to beat now in the East, especially with LeBron moving out west. And I just, it's interesting because I got some people were on my side on that, on the call about LeBron. Some were like, oh, are you kidding me? He's embracing a bigger challenge by going out to Golden State. But the way that, by going up in the same conference against Golden State, I'm saying, but the way this is all working out, he's the lone star on that team right now. So right now they know they can't compete with those guys. It's almost as if he's bought himself some time in the transition there. Whereas if he had stayed in Cleveland or even had gone to Philadelphia, it'd be expected that he'd get them right back to where they were. And now those expectations are, they're not on his shoulders anymore. And they're, I think that the power has clearly shifted to the East Coast, and at least in the Eastern Conference, than to Boston.
And it certainly seems to take any pressure off the Celtics here in this offseason, because they know they've already got two outstanding acquisitions with guys who were there and out, with Kyrie coming back, with Hayward coming back. Does it amaze you there are still fans in the Boston area that don't buy into what Danny Ainge has done with his team?
Yeah, I think those people are crazy, right? I mean, it's just, you can't, you know, everybody talked about the process in Philadelphia, but basically their process was, we're going to stink badly and hope that we hit on some of their picks. And right now, you don't even know if they really did or not. Embiid is a great player, but he's not always healthy. Ben Simmons wins Rookie of the Year, but he can't shoot. And Markelle Fultz was an abject disaster in his rookie season. So there's a lot of question marks about how they did it. You know, looking, not to say that the Celtics didn't stink. They did bottom out 6 or 7 years ago. But then it's been this nice build. And I think, you know, last year with, 2 years ago with Isaiah and the sort of the surprising run they made to the conference finals, and then you turn around and you basically detonated that entire team and went out and rebuilt the team, and you're better, and you're within, you know, you play game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and as you mentioned, without Kyrie Irving and without Gordon Hayward, I think it's pretty remarkable. And you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Kyrie at the end of next year. You know, does he stay? Does he go? You know, you hear all these rumblings about New York, or he wants to play with Jimmy Butler and all these different things. But right now, in the short term, you've got the best team in the East. And even if Kyrie were to leave with what you have in Tatum, Brown, Gordon Hayward coming back, and they've got a couple more picks that are coming up, they could add more young talent to that mix. So they've really built something awfully nice there. And, you know, I'm sure there are 20-some-odd GMs in the National Basketball Association that would love to be in Danny's position.
The Red Sox open a series with Kansas City tonight after sweeping the Nationals, neck and neck with the Yankees as they've been all year and probably as they will be throughout the second half of the season. Do they have enough in their minor league system to be able to tweak this roster at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think they're going to – it doesn't seem that way. It seems like all their best prospects aren't above A-ball, and that's, you know, that's concerning. I mean, maybe they can take a deep dive, or maybe they try to find, you know, as we've seen with relief pitchers in particular, sometimes change of scenery, sometimes second half versus first half, and maybe they identify a couple guys and they're able to get them at lower cost and bring them in and sort of add them to that mix. Because to me, that's really the only, I mean, that would be my major concern, is that bullpen. You know, who do you trust out there? Your setup guys, I mean, Embry and Barnes last year didn't make the playoff roster. And once again, you're counting on them. You brought back that same group. So Joe Kelly's sort of been up and down. So, yeah, I would love to see them add a bullpen arm. And, I'd love to see David Price beat the Yankees at some point. That would be nice and give him and me and everybody else a little confidence as they head into the postseason.
Is that a legitimate concern with Price? Obviously, the Yankees have his number in recent years. But do you buy into the argument that he just can't win big games? Because I don't necessarily agree with that.
No, I don't. He's clearly got something going on with the Yankees, but I think a lot of people have something going on with the Yankees. Mm. That's a really deep lineup, a very talented lineup. And yeah, he's had some stinkeroos. And when you get paid $30, $31 million a year, people are going to expect you're going to win some of those games, or at least you're going to be competitive in those games. And he certainly hasn't been in his last handful of starts against them. But I still think, look, he's still one of the better pitchers in the game. The makeup is fair to question. You know, he hasn't been great in the postseason, hasn't won a game as a starter in the postseason. He's going to need to change that if he wants to change the way people think about him. But I'm giving his stuff at least the benefit of the doubt. At least one more round, one more time, right?
There you go. Mike Girardi, NBC Sports Boston with us. Mike, as always, great talk with you. Thanks for checking in with us this afternoon. We'll do it again before too long.
Thanks, Rich. Have a good one.